Welcome to Valley Voices. I'm your host, Amy Haddon Marsh, and today's show features the voice of the late Dr. Theo Colborne, who founded the Endocrine Disruptor Exchange in Paonia, Colorado in 2003. Her work focused on reducing the production and use of chemicals that interfere with healthy hormone function. Much of her work focused on hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, a practice used by energy companies to bring natural gas and oil out of the ground. Dr. Colborne died in 2014, and now TEDx is closing its doors this month. Today's show features clips from a 2012 conversation between Dr. Colborne and KDNK reporter Ed Williams, plus highlights from a recent webinar featuring scientists and TEDx partners. The show opens with Dr. Theo Colborne.
We're a small nonprofit that grew out of the work that I had been doing in Washington, D.C. for the previous 15 years, that when I injured my spine, couldn't go back to Washington to work, and some of my staff pitched in, packed up everything, and helped us move everything out here to Colorado. We focus on chemicals that at low levels of exposure, and especially during prenatal days, that period when an individual is in the womb, can be affected by these chemicals. And of course, our work keeps expanding more and more. We find more and more chemicals are endocrine disruptors. But it's a whole new field of how to look at health, actually taking a health-based approach to do the research and find out what these chemicals are doing. Very unlike the toxicological approaches we used in the past, where we dosed adult animals with high doses to see how much we could feed them before they became ill.
Dr. Carol Kwiatkowski is the executive director of the Endocrine Disruptor Exchange. She spoke at a recent webinar remembering TEDx.
When Theo started TEDx, I imagine she had a singular vision that the world needed to know about endocrine disruption. I imagine this because whenever I asked her about our target audience, she replied, "Everyone, everyone needs to know this." Databases were always TEDx's media of choice. Most are still available on our website. And the good news is that our website will remain up until September of 2022. So please continue to make use of our resources for the next 3 years. I do want to mention that our most well-known database, the TEDx list of potential endocrine disruptors, we built this at a time when people were still haggling over the definition of an endocrine disruptor. In many ways, they still are. But we said, let's just get a list out there of all the chemicals that have shown some evidence of endocrine activity. The list ended up being extremely useful, especially for regulatory agencies in Europe, where they've made much more progress than they have here in the U.S. I think Theo's belief in the power of knowledge is what led her to take on fracking. Before, hardly anyone had heard the term. It began when she met a woman who had a fracked well explode in her backyard, and she subsequently developed a rare adrenal tumor, and she had a newborn baby. Of course, Theo's endocrine disruption radar was buzzing. She soon learned that finding out what chemicals were used in fracking was nearly impossible.
There's enough evidence now that the day the drill bit hits the play in which the gas going to come from, and they start releasing that raw gas, this is when people actually become ill. And there's another model there for us, too. The people who are employed, the workmen who come in and start working, they begin to experience the same symptoms the first day on the job. And they weren't around where they were drinking any of the water. These are people who have come in from outside the area, in all probability. So we need now to think about how we could shift the focus a little bit away from water. Don't let up on the water, my goodness, no. But somehow get some really good interest on the part of our legislators, the policymakers. And I know EPA would love to move forward with this. EPA's hands are tied. The air people have been told, hands off.
So then what you're saying is that fracking itself has become sort of a red herring for what's really a more comprehensive problem that involves, you know, diesel emissions from generators, volatile organic compounds coming from condensate tanks, and kind of the whole picture of heavy machinery and equipment and surface activity that goes along with natural gas production.
You're right. You're right on. All that heavy equipment. So, you know, the heavy equipment moves in, and just if somebody's coming in and you're going to have four or five well pads being established by different companies around you, there's a tremendous amount of earth moving, you know, digging holes, prepping that site. That takes a lot of machinery. A lot of diesel is burned, and in many instances now, you know, some places they're calling it cleaner. It's a better activity is to switch over wherever they can and use the gas that's actually coming up out of the ground to act as the fuel. But natural gas burns as dirty as diesel, so you're going to get the same air pollutants out of the natural gas you're burning to get the energy you need.
Later, at a meeting with Earthworks, someone from a company that handled oil and gas waste approached her with a box full of safety data sheets that identified chemicals used in fracking. This led to the development of our database of fracking chemicals and their associated health effects. At that time, fracking was still fairly unknown. All that changed when the Marcellus Shale began being developed and New York City became concerned. TEDx was subcontracted to research the health effects of fracking chemicals for their water board. This led to the New York City ban on fracking, which caught at the attention of the nation. Our early work also led to key research by Susan Nagel, Chris Kasotis, and others who were inspired to study the endocrine effects of fracking chemicals. Our work has consistently demonstrated that approximately a third of the hundreds of chemicals associated with fracking are endocrine disruptors. As a final capstone for TEDx, this summer, Earthworks enlisted our help again to develop a petition to the United Nations to enact the global ban on fracking. We also wrote a summary of health effects specific to Colorado, the original home of TEDx and a place still near and dear to our hearts. And on that note, I have some very good news to share. Marcia Richmond, a historian of biology whose research focuses on women in the life sciences, is currently writing a biography of Theo titled Sentinel of Science, Theo Colborne and the Discovery of Endocrine Disrupting Chemicals. This book will celebrate the life of Theo and will introduce a new generation of people to endocrine disruption.
Thank you very much, Carol. First, our presenter is Laura Vanderberg, Associate Professor and Graduate Program Director in the Department of Environmental Health Sciences at the University of Massachusetts Amherst School of Public Health and Health Sciences. And she'll provide the 10,000-foot view of the field of endocrine disruption, including what she sees on the horizon for the science, policy, and public awareness of this class of chemicals.
So it's a little tough to follow Carol, especially because I'm remembering the work that we've done together for the last 10 years. I started working with Theo more than 10 years ago on stuff that I'll just briefly talk about here. And I think Carol's right that we should have celebrated more when things went well, big and small. And I think honestly, today, my talk is meant to do that and to think, based on where we've been, where our successes have occurred, we can ask, where are we going? And sometimes it helps to step back and look at things from a different perspective. I offer to give the 10,000-foot view here, because sometimes when we do that, we can see things clearer. We can see things in a way that we can't see when we're in the middle of it. And a lot of us, I think, that that have been working in this field, we've been doing the day-to-day science without really thinking about what does this mean and where are we going. So I'm happy to take this opportunity to celebrate TEDx and to celebrate the many, many scientists that have contributed to the TEDx mission and the broader mission focused on endocrine disruptors. So one thing that I think is a tremendous opportunity and some success and where we're going forward is really expanding what we think about in terms of vulnerable periods or critical periods in development or in life. A lot of the work to date has really focused on the developing embryo, fetus, not just in humans, but in model species and in wildlife. And I think that as a developmental biologist, I think that's awesome. We've really come to understand how important the endocrine system is for basic development of creatures, and how interfering with those basic developmental processes affect the physiology in the long term, even if the individual looks normal at birth or in early life. But I think part of what we need to do and what we're starting to do is to expand to understand that at other periods of life, we also have vulnerability. We have very little work that has been done on exposures during puberty and in childhood. We have had a very low appreciation for how adult exposures could affect not just the future generations, either preconceptive exposures or exposures to the unborn, but also that the mother can be affected during pregnancy and the lactational period, that adults are affected by these chemicals. And we have very little information about how these chemicals might affect aging populations. So I think this going forward is a tremendous opportunity for us to sort of throw away the old dogma that hormones only have short-term effects on adults, and instead to explore how disruption, even for a short period of time, can have long-lasting effects. Another area that TEDx in particular has been working at the forefront and that we're in need of more work is an appreciation of chemical mixtures. Theo's incredibly groundbreaking approaches with other independent scientists to focus on mixtures used in hydraulic fracturing or fracking is absolutely an important example of how studying chemical mixtures is going to give us answers that we would not get from studying chemicals one at a time. There's a lot that we need to know about chemical mixtures. We need to know how important it is to derive the individual chemicals that are contributing to toxicity, how chemicals in mixtures might act additively or in competition with each other or synergistically, but also how chemicals in mixtures that act via different pathways but affect the same kind of outcome might act additively or synergistically in some way. So I think that the chemical mixture field has blossomed a lot in the last 5 years. We've had some great victories there, but there's a lot that needs to be done at every level of study, from understanding exposures to understanding effects of exposures to modeling those exposures.
This is Valley Voices. Today's show features the voice of the late Dr. Theo Colborne and scientists remembering her work and the importance of TEDx.
Another area where I think TEDx has been a part of the conversation is how do we improve and modernize the methods and approaches that are used to evaluate risk? This is a really complicated area, and some of the contributions that have been really groundbreaking by TEDx and academic partners are to change how we evaluate data that already exist. We have huge amounts of data for some chemicals, and yet those data are not being used in the regulatory process. And part of that is needing to know how do we evaluate reproducibility? How do we evaluate validity of outcomes? And TEDx and their approaches to conducting systematic reviews and scoping reviews has provided really great steps forward for our field. I think we've gotten really good at evaluating toxicity. We know what kills and we know how things kill, but we're not still very good at identifying outcomes that are relevant to human diseases. This is something a lot of us have a lot of passion about. It's work that academic partners are working to develop the right outcomes relevant to diseases, specifically endocrine diseases, but we have a ways to go there. There's a big movement to move away from animal testing to using in vitro screening, to using molecular modeling approaches, to using high throughput screens with perhaps non-vertebrate animals. But we need to develop approaches to actually using those data during risk assessment. Those data exist. A lot of these assays exist, and we haven't convinced the right people for how to use them when we're making decisions about chemical safety.
Believe me, over the years, one study after another has demonstrated what ozone does to evergreens. Anything with needles, an ozone molecule gets into the needle, into the pore in that needle, and just burns a little hole, just like it does if it gets into the alveoli in our lungs. It will burn a little hole. And every exposure after that, it will burn it more. So that suddenly the forests become vulnerable. They're not producing, they're not reproducing like they should. They become vulnerable to drought. They will do it sooner. They will actually become more less pest resistant. They're not going to be able to fight off insects, those kinds of things that like to eat our trees. We're very familiar with that now. So this is a big problem that, again, you can't see it. It's going to be difficult to measure, but we learned enough from what has been going on around the country in areas where there is enough natural gas activity that you're beginning to see these kind of effects. We have areas to the west of us where ozone has been extremely high, 155 parts per billion, when we know that anything above 40 parts per billion in 10 part per billion increments, you can begin to see health effects in the human population.
Dr. Sarah Wiley, Associate Professor of Anthropology and Sociology and Health Science at Northeastern University. She's going to discuss how engaged, collaborative, and caring research will continue the work of TEDx through a number of activities, especially around unconventional oil and gas activities.
I am really honored to be able to join this chorus of thank you for the Endocrine Disruption Exchange, and particularly Theo, who've played such a pivotal role in my work. I arrived into Paonia in the winter of 2006, into this small rural Colorado town, and first did an internship with Theo that has ended up producing, my book, Fractivism, Corporate Bodies and Chemical Bonds, which describes the work of TEDx building the first database of chemicals used in fracking and their health effects, a project that I was really lucky to be able to collaborate in beginning to build. And the first summary of that database was released in 2006. And I've been really loving how frequently TEDx's work building archives and doing public communications work have come up in the talk so far. And this talk builds on that. I'm going to describe a little bit about the outcomes of that database and then reflect on the current moment and provide a really concrete idea for one next step that I think might be a really great collaborative project. So returning to this first publication of the chemicals used in natural gas development and their health effects, TEDx shared this as a project that was designed to provide a glimpse of the patterns of possible health hazards for those living in proximity to gas development. And this fell to the hands of a small, some would say, under-resourced nonprofit to build this database because of the exemptions of fracking from the Safe Drinking Water Act in 2005. And as I outline in my book, the many strategies that this industry uses to become unarchivable that makes it very hard to tell a coherent story about its impacts. And TEDx really began providing one of the first kind of coherent stories about the overall potential impacts of practicing hydraulic fracking at scale. So this is one of the figures from their 2011 version of the summary of fracking chemicals. And what they showed in this, what they did was organize these chemicals by their potential health effects and show large scale patterns. So for instance, of the volatile chemicals, those that evaporate in air, over 90% of them were skin sense organ toxicants by TEDx's reckoning. Then very concerning, brain and nervous system toxicants are also very high in the volatile chemicals. And looking over at endocrine disruptors, as Carol mentioned early on, they predicted here that about 40% of them were endocrine disruptors. So this way of presenting the chemicals used in fracking on a spectrum as a whole, potentially impacting a wide range of health systems, was really transformational to public debate around this health and safety of this practice, which had largely been not investigated after the EPA's initial report in 2004. And so TEDx was vital in bringing legislative attention, the first congressional hearing from Waxman, Markey, and DeGette on the health effects of fracking. They inspired Gasland, which really carried a broad message of concern from communities and featured Theo prominently. And they also enabled EPA to begin its first investigations into the chemicals used in this practice following that exemption from the Safe Drinking Water Act. And they've also now produced a booming field of research in the environment. Mental health impacts of fracking, such that we now have, and this is from TEDx's current database of studies on health effects and fracking, we now have 6 epidemiological studies demonstrating that people who live with close proximity to oil and gas wells have an increased risk of childhood leukemia, asthma attacks, congenital heart defects, birth weight and low birth weight and preterm birth compared with people who live with no production nearby. And this ought to be really concerning to the 17.6 million Americans who now live within a mile of oil and gas wells. So despite the rise of concern about the public health impacts of this practice, this has spread to 33 states and beyond. And as President Trump loudly says, a golden era of American energy is now underway thanks to the use of hydraulic fracking to extract both natural gas and oil. So fracking was sold as a bridge to a low carbon future because it was supposed to increase the supply of natural gas. And what was often not reflected on is that hydraulic fracking is also equally useful in extracting oil, such that now in 2018, the US is leading globally both natural gas and crude oil production. And this is only set to increase. Oil executives in Houston are describing what's coming as a tsunami, or and perhaps awfully as this coming flood of oil as being of biblical proportions. And that's because of the massive investments that are going ahead in building pipelines to increase the flow of oil from the Permian Basin to the Gulf Coast, oil and natural gas for export. And of course, one of the things that's often overlooked as we discuss fracking is that natural gas also goes to feed the massive production of petrochemicals, because 70% of the cost of producing ethylene, which is one of the base components of many plastics, comes from natural gas. So the reduced cost of natural gas is spurring a massive investment in chemical production nationally. And so there are 5 steam crackers set to begin operation by the end of 2019 along the Gulf Coast. And when we look at who is producing ethylene from those cracking operations, we see the oil majors appearing. So what Theo was trying to push people towards the end of her oil and gas work was really thinking about how to connect endocrine disruptors and climate change through the lens of hydraulic fracking, which demands many petrochemicals and is also producing many more petrochemicals, many of which are endocrine disruptors. So while we are doubling down on oil and gas extraction nationally in terms of infrastructure building and production capacity, we are also at a pivotal moment where we have 2 of the leading Democratic candidates for president saying they support a ban of fracking, where we're seeing international climate strikes and real proposals for a Green New Deal. What could be done now, building on the spirit of TEDx's archiving work? So when TEDx first released its database, it called for two things, full disclosure of chemicals used in fracking and monitoring. And what we have ended up with is a disclosure that has been described as opaque transparency through the website supported by industry, Frack Focus, which is notorious for being very hard to search and very hard to analyze. I'll just give you a quick example. They describe that chemicals are used in fracking, but don't provide any information on the health effects of those chemicals. And if you're going to look for a well near you, you need an enormous amount of information to be able to find out about it. You need to know the CAS number, the chemical abstract services number for the particular chemical you're looking for instance, the API number for the well name, the range start date. So how can we make this database more useful? I've been chatting with a researcher called Gary Allison, and he has just published online, you guys can all check it out here, on Code Ocean, a cleaned up version of the Frack Focus database, where he's trying to demonstrate methods to transform this opaque transparency vehicle into a usable research database.
The Endocrine Disruptor Exchange closes its doors on November 30th. The website will remain available until 2022. This is Valley Voices. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.